Hi, I'm Luke Dennis, the Development Director at WYSO. We are happy we can deliver these programs to you, people who listen on the web, and we rely on you to help us pay for this service. So at our website, wyso.org, click Support This Station and help keep these services coming. And thank you.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today James A. Cobb, Jr. He's just written a book called Flood of Lies, the St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy. He joins us by telephone from somewhere down south from the sound of your voice. Where are you located right now?
Vic, we call that the center of the universe. We call it New Orleans.
Okay. And you were just telling me about the wonderful lunch that you had, and this book, I'll tell you, this book, when I got clear to the end and I realized how you decided to write it and that a famous writer had suggested that you write it, I was astonished. How do you even know this guy?
Are you talking about John Berendt?
Yeah.
Met him at a lunch at Galatoire's restaurant on Bourbon Street in New Orleans, which is how all great stories that emanate from New Orleans begin. It was a total happenstance meeting. And he asked me, I told him the story of what I'd done during Katrina. He said he'd heard of that, and he was fascinated by it. And he said, you ought to write something about it. And I said, well, I have. And then he committed the fateful error and said, well, I'd like to read it. Well, knowing I was having lunch with the great John Berendt, author of Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, I happened to have my pitch piece in my coat pocket and said, here it is.
Uh-huh.
And then within 24 hours, I got a voicemail from him, having just met him, that said, Jim, this is John Berendt. We met yesterday. I've read your pitch piece. It's wonderful. It's a book. It's a movie. It's a big book. It's whatever you want it to be, so stick with it.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was sort of the encouragement I needed at that point in time, because I was about to give up.
Well, the book just came out this week, and from the very beginning, from the front cover, we get a sense of just what a horrifying story this is.
It is indeed. Out of all the terrible stories during Katrina, you see the people on the rooftops, the people at the Superdome, the people at the convention center, people unrescued, people forgotten by their government, the story of the St. Rita's nursing home tragedy, where 35 old folks literally drowned in their wheelchairs and their beds, unable to escape the oncoming floodwaters, it was probably the most graphic and upsetting of all the horrible stories that we heard during those weeks. And it was some tough stuff.
And you ended up getting involved in this case. Tell our listeners how that occurred.
Well, that's a wonderful chapter in the book called Divine Intervention. And I didn't know these people, Sal and Mabel Mangano. They're a husband and wife. They'd owned and operated this nursing home in St. Bernard Parish, probably 30 minutes south of New Orleans, going on the way to the Gulf of Mexico. And never met them, never represented, didn't know them. The horrible events happened at St. Rita's. They're evacuated by the National Guard, put on a boat across the Mississippi River, then put on a bus, and then sent to a high school gymnasium in Dallas, Texas, as part of the refugee evacuee process, sleeping on a cot, not exactly watching the news. What they didn't know was that the Attorney General of Louisiana was on television, broadcasting essentially an all-points bulletin, labeling them fugitives. Anyone knowing the whereabouts of the owners of the St. Rita's nursing home, please contact the Attorney General. They weren't watching TV. And they became the centerpiece of what was a national sort of manhunt. They came back to Louisiana. They talked to their regular lawyer. It was a young, fine young lawyer by the name of Jeremy Gu. And he said, I can't handle this. This case is too big. He talked to his dad, Ron Gu, who was the president of the Nursing Home Association. His dad said, you don't handle it. They're going to put the entire nursing home industry on trial. You need to get this guy Jim Cobb. And the young goose says, well, I don't know who he is. And his dad said, I tell you what to do, son. I can't tell you how to do it. And hung up on him.
Huh.
So the young guy then spends 2 days trying to find me. This was after Katrina. Cell phones didn't work. People didn't know where people were. Family members didn't know where their family members were. And the Attorney General's office is now on his back saying, where are your clients? And he's got an obligation to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
So he winds up in a barroom north of New Orleans in Covington, crying in his beer, saying, I gotta find this guy. I don't know if he's on a rooftop. I don't know where he is. And if I don't find him, I'm in big trouble. And there's a woman at the end of the bar listening in on his conversation and says, excuse me, are you talking about Jim Cobb, the lawyer from New Orleans? And he says, I am. Do you know him? She says, no. But I have a friend, Rochelle, whose mother I think is friends with Jim Cobb's wife. Do you want me to call her? Mm-hmm. And the lawyer says, please. So she does, and finds out that her mom, that Rochelle's mom, was in Houston. They'd spoken that day for the first time. And she knew where my wife was and gave that information to the lady in the bar, who gave it to the lawyer. And the next morning, I got a call from Mabel Mangano asking me, Mr. Cobb, can you please help us? And that's how I got the case. And that is, in large measure, why I wrote the book. Because Mabel believed that it was quite simply devout Roman Catholic, goes to church 3 or 4 times a week. When I told Mabel the story of how they found me and what an incredible coincidence it was, Mabel said, that's not a coincidence, Jim. He sent you to me. Hmm. And that's why I got the case.
And the story is told in Jim's new book, just came out, Flood of Lies, the St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy. I'm sure most of our listeners recall, in the aftermath of that terrible Hurricane Katrina, the media feeding frenzy over this particular tragedy. And recently I had my favorite Louisiana novelist on the program, James Lee Burke, and he was reminiscing about some things his dad used to say. And one thing, to paraphrase, was his dad used to say, you'll never find a mob rushing off to perform a good deed. And you really get the sense that this was the mob rushing to commit some terrible vengeance, some terrible injustice against these two people.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just the media mob. When we went to our arraignment in St. Bernard Parish after they had charged us and we had to answer the charges, there was a mob of family members of the victims with protest signs and shouted recriminations that were just chilling to me. We walked through, 50 or 60 people who'd lost their mothers, their fathers, their grandmothers, their grandfathers, and I heard for the first time in my career someone yell at a client of mine, murderer. And it was enough to set you back on your heels. The only thing this crowd didn't have on the courthouse steps of St. Bernard Parish Courthouse was, rope and torches. Because it was the scene of a sort of a lynch mob, and it was because the media back then broadcast whatever somebody told them. The word fact-checking never crossed the minds of people in the 24/7 post-Katrina media feeding frenzy. And if someone called them and said, I heard that the owners were in Mississippi at a casino, they weren't even there. Mm-hmm. That wound up on CNN or Headline News. If somebody said, I heard the owners tied the victims to their wheelchairs and their beds and left them, that got reported. Mm-hmm. So as the accumulation of all that reportage accumulated, it was everybody believed these were the most, they were called the monsters of Katrina. And I saw it in my hotel room in Houston. We lost our home. We had 6 feet of water. Me and the kids moved 4 times. They went to 3 different schools. It's the most horrible event that one can imagine in one's life. And I'm watching on the television these reports. And I turn to my wife, not knowing these defendants, and I say, forget about a trial. They just ought to take these two people out and shoot them. And then that day is the day that I got the call from Mabel, totally unexpected, asking me to help her. And when the call came in, I was watching CNN live. They had a helicopter with live pictures as they were pulling the bodies out of St. Rita's, and the voiceover by the reporter was, we're now watching rescue workers pull out 35 bodies from the St. Rita's nursing home. The question on the mind of Louisiana officials is, why didn't they evacuate? I was on the phone with the only person in the world who could answer that question. It was spooky.
And it should be noted that criminal law really wasn't your specialty. And you were lucky to be able to bring in a couple of attorneys into this case, including one who specializes in criminal law, that really made a difference.
Oh, absolutely. We had a team. Bob Habens was living in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a giant lawyer, a terrific criminal lawyer. John Wilson Reed, of criminal lawyer in New Orleans with a terribly undistinguished pedigree, Yale and Harvard. And somehow the three of us came together. I'd known them before, and we became the Mangano defense team. And we rarely ever agreed on a course of action when we had a decision to make. What are we going to do? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? Almost never did the three of us all agree initially, but we always came to an agreement as to course of action, and nobody second-guessed anybody else. And it was a formidable team and honestly the most gratifying professional experience of my life to be in a case with these guys defending two people who I later came to find out everything that everybody had said about them was false.
Yeah. The book is Flood of Lies. Jim Cobb joins us, and this book takes us blow by blow through the entire thing, through the way the whole case developed and the way that you guys strategized and the way that you picked the jury and the way that the governor of the state even got dragged into this.
And, sure.
And I love how you give us a snapshot of your thought process. And there were a couple of spots, even though this is a really serious, tragic case, there are a couple spots where I just had to laugh. Like when they brought in 2 years later, when this thing was finally going to trial, they finally had the jury set. They finally had this thing happening. And you're doing things like ridiculing their professional experts because
yeah.
they were Yankees.
They were Yankees. I don't want to say that too loudly since I know we're in Ohio right now, aren't we?
Southwest Ohio. This is Copperhead Country down here.
Well, then that's a little better. But the government of Louisiana had hired an expert from Chicago or North Chicago and another one from upstate New York to come in and talk about what happened to these old folks. So I would get them on the witness stand and say, Doctor so-and-so, where are you from? Well, I'm from upstate New York. I said, that's way upstate New York, isn't it? And they charged the state of Louisiana an extraordinary amount of money to say the obvious, that this was a terrible experience for these folks, that they suffered, that it was cruel and sort of unusual circumstance for them, all of which we had stipulated to. So what we were able to show through the government's overreaching in terms of hiring expensive experts who weren't even from down here, we got two pretty good medical schools down here, Tulane University and Louisiana State. They had to go, as I put it in my argument, Judge, they had to go all the way to Canada almost to find a witness to say this. Can I get that in? And the judge ruled against me. But you're absolutely right. There were some funny parts of it because if you can't find some humor someplace in this kind of an endeavor, you just become totally morose and inundated by the sadness, the overwhelming sadness of what you were faced with.
And then you bring in your expert that sounds like he's from Alabama.
Yeah, his name was Dr. Bronson Lutz. He's from upstate Alabama. And he, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. Uh-huh. And he sounded and looked like the jury that we picked, and it was a wonderful juxtaposition to the witnesses that the state put on. And he's a character. As in this book, it's really a book about characters, all kinds of different characters who come to this story and make an onstage appearance, stay there for a while, and then go offstage. And then some character replaces them, and they're on the stage for a while, and then they go offstage. So it's a book about characters. It's character-driven, but it's character-driven in the sense that it's nonfiction. We didn't make any of it up. I like to think, and I've been told by some pretty good writers, that it's nonfiction, but it reads like great fiction. And I think that's, if that's true, that's the biggest hope I could have and high praise indeed.
The book is Flood of Lies, the St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy. James A. Cobb Jr. joins us. He wrote it. He was the attorney who represented the monsters of Hurricane Katrina. And I would not have heard about this book had it not been for our mutual friend, Ken Bodie, former national political correspondent for NBC News, who has a wonderful blurb on the back of your book. It says, quote, "What Jim Cobb captures better than any writer I've read is how deeply the media's pretrial feeding frenzy shaped public perceptions about the St. Rita's Nursing Home tragedy. When Sal and Mabel Mangano entered the St. Francisville courtroom facing multiple charges of murder, they also faced a near-universal presumption of guilt. Cobb's brash, brilliant storytelling takes you behind the scenes of an important test for the American system of justice." And I have to agree with Bodie, and I'm thankful to him for pointing out this book. In fact, he loaned me his personal copy just so I could read your story.
Well, I want to thank Ken for that, but at the same time, I want to suggest to Ken in the future that he make somebody buy the book rather than keep lending out his personal copy. But Bodie, as a national correspondent, has been at the trough of gratuities throughout his career, so it's hard for him to do it any other way. I love Ken Bodie, and I'm so honored and tickled by his commentary. It was a test for the American criminal justice system, and the near-universal presumption of guilt was borne out when we did some political polling of the parish in which the case was ultimately tried. We needed to know, because I had no idea, what kind of juror do you want on this case? Do you want an old one? Do you want a young one? Do you want a smart one? Do you want a not-so-smart one? Hmm. Do you want a rich one? Do you want a poor one? Do you want a white one? Do you want a black one? Had no idea.
Yeah.
So we did some polling and unfortunately found out that of all the people, first of all, 90% of the people polled had heard of the case, knew about it. Hmm. Wouldn't you love to have that kind of recognition number for your show, or anybody have that kind of recognition for anything? 90% knew about it. Of the people who had made up their minds, who were leaning in one direction or the other, 72% of them thought the defendants were guilty, which was a testament to the bludgeoning that they suffered at the hands of the national media. So we went into a jury selection process where we got to figure out, okay, 7 out of 10 people think we did it. Now, who do we pick and why, and who do we not pick and why not? And that, to me, is, as a lawyer, is some of the most interesting data contained in the book.
And you were so fortunate to get this expert in jury selection involved. What a nice guy he was.
Right. His name is Phil James. He's with Trial Solutions, Inc., in the Northeast someplace, and I was giving a speech at the American Health Lawyers Association, and a lawyer came up to me afterwards and said, look, I got this guy. He's really good. Do you want him to call you? I said, sure. I knew we couldn't afford him. Sal and Mabel were defending themselves and paying for it out of their pocket. There's no insurance that covers you on a 118-count indictment of negligent homicide and cruelty to the elderly and infirmed. So they were paying for it out of their pocket, and finances were a huge concern for us. So anyway, this guy calls me. I was stunned. And I said, well, Phil, I'd love to have you on board, but I don't think we can afford you. And he said, you know what? I want to be in this case. I think that they have been so unfairly treated, and I can't imagine a harder situation to try to pick a jury than this case. Nursing home cases are real hard anyway, against civil cases against nursing homes or criminal cases. It's the hardest thing you can imagine. So I'll get in this case, and I'll just charge you my expenses and won't charge you a fee, which was extraordinary. And so he was very, very helpful. Our pollster was Joe Walker, the late, great Joe Walker, political pundit, pollster, veteran of political campaigns in Louisiana for 40 years. This was one of the last cases he did.
Mm.
And he gave us just some nuggets of information which proved invaluable in our jury selection process. This kind of a case, when you have this high of a recognition factor, when you have that many people who think your client was guilty, you can lose the case in jury selection. You can't win it in jury selection. You can give yourself a chance to win it, but you could have lost it in jury selection.
I love the way you were able to get the governor on the stand. I don't want to give that away because it's kind of a spoiler, but then you got to mention Richard Nixon, which to me was the crowning achievement.
Well, I was in the first Vietnam lottery in 1970.
Uh-huh.
I was either going to Vietnam or Montreal or Quebec, and Tricky Dick was the president back then, so I was not a big fan of Richard Nixon. But the governor of the state of Louisiana took the position. We subpoenaed her to testify as a defense witness in a murder case. And they took the position, the government did, that, wait a second, it's unprecedented to suggest that a governor be forced to testify as a defense witness in a murder case that she didn't witness. And it's unprecedented, Your Honor, and don't let them do it. Well, my counter to that argument was that I guess the assistant attorney general forgot about a case, a little case he should have heard of. It's called United States versus Nixon, in which the president of the United States was required to comply with a subpoena to come up with records and documents in a 9-0 United States Supreme Court ruling. So I think that if it's good enough for the U.S. Supreme Court, Your Honor, it's good enough for me. And we won that one. and forced her to testify. And all I can tell your listeners and hopefully your readers of this book is she acquitted herself as a witness almost as well as she acquitted herself as governor.
Ouch.
Ouch is right.
The book is Flood of Lies, The St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy, just published by Pelican out of Louisiana. And the author, Jim Cobb, has joined us. He was the lead attorney on this case. I think the last time I had a lead attorney on this program, his name was Petricelli.
Oh, my. Yeah. I'm in good company.
Yeah. So we try to be selective about these guys and gals because, well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of attorneys out there trying to get on the program. I get calls every day from them. I'm just kidding.
they're not looking for more business, are they? Because I'm not licensed to practice in Ohio, so my motives here are pristine and pure.
Oh, good. Well, this is quite a story, and I'm not going to give away the ending, but people that follow the story probably have a good sense of how it ends. And just
well, you know, that's amazing that you say that, Vic, because I've been talking to people about this case for 6 years, and everybody remembers the case. Everybody remembers the incident. Everybody remembers the tragedy. And I'll ask them, I said, do you remember that nursing home that filled up with water and 35 people died? Yeah. And then I'll say, do you remember how it turned out?
Hmm.
And 80% plus say, you know, I don't remember how it turned out. So this book will tell those folks who don't remember how it turned out, number one. But number two, even if you remember how it turned out, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey of how we got to that destination, which is, I think, if your listeners and readers are interested in a murder mystery whodunit with Hurricane Katrina as the background scenery and a five-week trial, in a major, at the time it was tried in 07, it was the biggest criminal case in America. This book will give you a peek behind the curtain of exactly what happened that nobody knows about.
So are you saying that after the whole thing was resolved that Nancy Grace didn't do a special program about it?
She did not, and she didn't return my calls because the last time I spoke to her producer, there were a lot of expletives used in that conversation. I actually rename Nancy Grace in my book because she was the lead jackal on cable television, destroying the Mangano's presumption of innocence, destroying the fact that they were entitled to have the true information disseminated. I rename her in my book. She's no longer Nancy Grace. I call her Nancy Disgrace.
You also don't seem to have a particular fondness for insurance companies.
No, and I come by that honestly. I represented them for 30 years. The insurance companies, what they did to me personally and what they did to all the residents down here who had flooded homes and wind claims and property claims and flood claims, is that they basically choked people off, and it was not a bright, shining moment for them to step up and honor their contract of insurance. And they treated us abominably down here. And a lot of people who, you know, didn't have the wherewithal, didn't have the resources, didn't have the education of being a lawyer, gave up and just withered on the vine. So, no, I don't have a lot of joy in my heart for the way they treated us down here in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
When you were getting ready to publish, did you have some attorneys vet your book just to make sure there weren't any things in there that might be, cause for litigation?
Libelous, defamatory, scandalous?
Yeah.
I did. In fact, my two colleagues, Bob Habens and John Reed, I let them read the whole book. I said, guys, this is how I remember it. If your memory is any different, please let me know. And if you see any problem there, please let me know that, too. And both Bob and John said, no, you got it nailed pretty good. I did, however, recount some of Bob's more colorful language, which he used on multiple occasions, as did we all. And he said, Jim, do you really have to say that that's what I said? And I said, Bob, isn't that what you said? And he said, well, I guess it is. I said, well, it's going in the book. Uh-huh. So I tried to remain true to the real people and the real facts. Of course, it's subject to my memory not being exactly the same as somebody else's. But remember, if you write the book, it's your version of the history that the reader gets to read.
The book is Flood of Lies, The St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy. Jim Cobb wrote it. He joins us on the program today. And we really get a good view of your personality, your lifestyle, your family, the things that you were going through personally while all this was unfolding. This was a very difficult time for your family, for you to have to be dealing with this case while they were recovering from the hurricane and being dislocated and all this stuff going on. And then we have these little asides where we get a sense of the fact that you love a good meal and you love a good drink.
Is there anything else in life other than family, good meals and good drinks? I mean, that's the big three down here in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And I do share that, but I thought it was important to put in context, not just write a dry book about a legal case and a trial and that kind of stuff, but to put it in context of what the players were going through in the case. My family, we lost our home. We lost all our possessions. We moved four times, lived in a hotel room for 3 weeks, wife, two kids, and a dog, room, not a suite, a room. My kids changed schools three times. And then you superimpose on top of that dislocation the notion that I just got hired to defend the monsters of Katrina in the biggest criminal case in America. I want to give the reader an idea of what we were going through and a sense of the pressure that was on us from all sides. Because what I hope the book does is, number one, I hope it informs. I hope it takes folks who remember this tragedy but don't remember its outcome and informs them as to the real true facts. The second thing I hope it does is that I hope it touches them. I hope that in telling our story, my family's story, the Mangano story, and the larger story of what happened down here, that they are touched and moved by the book. And I think for any author, if you can inform people, maybe change some minds, give them information they didn't have before, and move them and touch them at the same time, you can't ask for any more than that.
Well, it definitely is a page-turner, and if it hadn't really happened, you'd almost think somebody made it up because it's just so outrageous. The book is Flood of Lies, The St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy, written by James A. Cobb, Jr., just published by Pelican, which is an imprint out of, is it Gretna, Louisiana?
Gretna, Louisiana, right across the Mississippi River, across the Greater New Orleans Bridge, literally a stone's throw from downtown New Orleans.
And I see that they have it filed under social science, disasters and disaster relief. I never knew that was a category.
I didn't either. I'm not happy about that. I asked my publisher, I said, could you have found a little bit more obscure category to list it under? we're also listed under media and the law on Amazon. And this morning, we were the number three book in media and the law. And I like that. My own view was, as a publishing company, we should have been listed in true crimes and criminal law. But someone with a higher pay grade than I makes that decision. After all, I'm only the author.
Well, it's been great having you on the program.
Vic, this is a real treat. I got lots of good friends in Ohio. I got a high school buddy who went to Archbishop Alter High in Kettering.
Oh.
And love Ohio. And except when they're playing LSU, I love the Buckeyes.
Well, Jim, thanks. You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. The book is Flood of Lies. Next week, we'll be talking to one of our leading food writers. Michael Ruhlman has got a couple of new books out. One is a book about charcuterie, and the other is a book about schmaltz. You can't make this stuff up in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.